Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
All right. Ready? One, two, three. Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, band.video, vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate it. We know you've got a lot of choices out there. Look, if you're interested in getting out of the cold for a couple days in early February, might I suggest Anarcapulco 2023. It's happening February 6th through the 10th in Acapulco, Mexico. Come on out, take a look, see what you think. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be speaking. Obviously, Jeff Berwick will be there, but we've got a full cast of characters. Max Egan, Larkin Rose, David Icke, Dan Dix, Ron Paul, Mark Passio, Del Bigtree, Miriam Hanane, Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Carrie Midday, a bunch of people, a whole cast of characters for the crypto stage. If you're interested in that, if you're interested in homeschooling or unschooling, they'll have that there as well. There's a kids camp as well. So if you've got kids and you want to make it a vacation, do this. Just go take a look at anarcapulco.com. And if you find something that you like tickets, use the promo code MACRO. Save yourself a little bit of money. The link will be in the description for that. Thanks to our newest sponsor, Legal Shield. I'm really glad we've got them, but I feel a little stupid for not having this sooner because it's such a no-brainer. Look, it's the collective buying power of all of us directed towards high-powered law firms in our area. It allows you to have access to an attorney. Average attorneys that work with Legal Shield, 22 years of experience, so you're not getting somebody fresh out of law school. This company has been around for 50 years. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and they are available in the United States and Canada. They built a landing page for us. If you're interested in checking out what it is exactly they do, you can go to www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. Look, read up for yourselves. I think this is a valuable piece of the puzzle. When you don't have an attorney, when you don't have representation, people will push you around. You'll get, you know, letters from your HOA or people that say they're going to do something and don't. Look, if you have an attorney in your back pocket, you will use it. I would suggest everybody get legal documents done while you can. This service costs $1 a day. It's $30 a month. It's unbelievably cheap. But I'll tell you what isn't cheap. Getting a last will and testament, getting a financial power of attorney, getting a medical power of attorney. God knows, after what we've been through the last 2 years, you want to have a medical directive in case something bad happens. You have somebody that can control things for you. You don't want to pay for that. It's thousands of dollars. It's a pain in the butt, but you got to have it. So my suggestion is take a look at this service, see if it's right for you. If it is, pull the trigger. It's not just the Legal Shield. There's also ID Shield as well. You've got Small Business Plan. If that's something, if you run a small business and you want legal representation, look, use this service, but use it for good. Don't use it for evil. Don't go sending letters threatening people with it. But just so you know, I mean, you have now the ability to have somebody take a look at legal contracts that you're asked to sign. If your employer is asking you to sign some new employment contract that has some funky medical language in there and you're not sure about it, look, we're not attorneys. We don't understand that the words mean different things in a legal setting. So have somebody review these contracts for you. Go to don'tgetpushedaround.com and see what you think. Also, Chemical Free Body has been with us for pretty much since this show started. I take their products every single day. No exaggeration. I have Green 85 every morning. It's fantastic. I think you guys should take a look at this. If for no other reason, then I think I might have found one of the few companies that's in the vitamin industry that isn't a scam. They're actually making great products that really do work. I have no problem sending people over to Chemical Free Body because I trust the products. I use them. I trust Tim James. He's been on the show more than anybody else. He always has fantastic health advice for us. So I think it's interesting for people to go over there, just take a look, see what you think. Nobody's going to get healthy for you. You're just going to have to make the decision to do it yourself. So if 2023 is the year that you're finally going to take your health into your own hands, or you want to do the gut toxin detox in a box, go to chemicalfreebody.com, use the promo code MACRO, see what you think, save yourself some money, and I don't know, get yourself feeling better for the new year. Well, now that the business is out of the way, I'm really excited about this guest because I've been on his show. He is a former professor of international relations. He is the host of Geopolitics and Empire podcast, and you can also find him Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern on TNT Radio, hosting the Hrvoje Moric show. It is Hrvoje Moric. What's going on? Wearing your Croatian jersey. Super stoked for today.
Here we go. And I get representing.
It's good to see you again, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well. Can't complain.
Well, I don't even know where to start these days with analyzing these things. Let's start where you are. You're located in Mexico. So let's just start in your backyard. We are seeing a coordinated effort to move migrant caravans through South America, up through Central America, and into the United States. I have taken my best guess at why this is. I see a lot of Trilateral Commission members in the Biden, can't be an active Trilateral Commission member. You have to sort of put your membership on ice if you want to go into back into the revolving door back into politics. And a lot of these guys have Jake Sullivan and Blinken and these top guys are trilaterals, and they all talk about open borders. And then what do you know? We have no sort of sense of urgency with closing up our southern border. What are you seeing in Mexico? Are we imagining this, or is there something more to this?
Well, in daily life, it's not like in your face, but you see in the center. I live in the second biggest city in Mexico, Guadalajara. There are migrants on the streets, on the rail tracks. I see them around town. And so, yeah, they're here, but you don't see, you don't see the caravan. But as you said, I think it's all going on. It's all happening. And I think it's precisely to do with what you said. I think it's all about the North American Union. And in the last month or two, there were key pieces of, key developments, basically, where we've been talking about this for a long time. They call us conspiracy theorists. I did the last living interview, I believe, with the father of the North American Union. You mentioned Dan Dix earlier, who will be in Acapulco. He's great. He did that great documentary. I forget the name, where he interviewed Alan Gottlieb, the ambassador, Canadian ambassador to the U.S. I've interviewed him as well on my podcast years ago. He passed away, but Robert Pastor, right? I got the book right behind me, North American Community. He was pushing North American Union. I interviewed him with my class in December of 2013. He passed in January 2014 of cancer. And basically, we had in September, you mentioned Blinken and AMLO, López Obrador, my president, because I'm also Mexican. He was literally, you can go read the transcript. AMLO was saying, they're working on integrating Canada, USA, and Mexico. So literally he's saying North, and he said based on the EU. I for 20 years, also EU citizen, Croatian. Yeah. EU is the model for world government.
Yes.
For technocracy. And that's the prototype they created. Then they want to replicate around the world. So North American Union, South American Union, African Union, Middle Eastern Union, Abraham Accords, you know, Putin and Nazarbayev, or got the Eurasian Union, Southeast Asian Union. And so no wonder AMLO says we want to replicate the EU in North America. We're integrating Canada, USA, and Mexico. And then we had recently Lula, who was just, I think, officially formalized his presidency yesterday. In May, he was calling for a sur, a common South American currency, sur. And Rafael Correa, former president of Ecuador, just like 2 or 3 weeks ago, came out and said the same thing AMLO said, that we need to recreate the EU in South America. So let's create a South American union. So if you think about that, and then so what's the EU doing when it comes to migration? You know, the UN just said a few weeks ago, we need to import 60 million migrants to UK and Europe. So basically, you have to get rid of localism, national level identity, tradition, and culture, and mix everything up. It's like Babylon, basically. Supernationalism, Babylon. And so I think that's why they're pushing the migrants in. And it's funny, you've been noticing since the pandemic, so many Canadians and Americans are coming to Mexico. Just over the weekend in my church, I met a Mexican-American who was down here from the U.S. looking to buy property to invest in Mexico, Airbnb stuff. So to have a supranational system, you need to level out the economic, right? Can't have too much disparity. So you sort of see in this process of Americans coming to Mexico, Mexicans, a little bit, they're trying to get to that leveling off to create this North American union. So I think that's what all the migration stuff is. And then you got in 2026, the next World Cup is going to be in North America, Canada, USA, and Mexico. So again, that's all part of that cultural push to create this identity of, and that's what Robert Pastor, I met him here when he would visit the school, and he would say, we're all North Americans. He would say, you're not Canadian, you're not American, you're not Mexican, we are North Americans. So really, that's what it's all about.
And AMLO was talking about a shared constitution too, if I
haven't heard that.
That was like the leaked from some sort of leaked conversation where he had mentioned shared constitution. Everyone went, I'm sorry, what are you talking about? Actually, one of the American politicians who pretends like he's against all this stuff, but probably isn't, made a big deal about the linked message, you know, the conversation about this shared constitution. But it falls in line with this. This is stuff that Aaron Russo was talking about in Freedom to Fascism in 2006 with that movie. He's talking about Nick Rockefeller saying, well, the plan is the North American Union and then the Amero currency, which was this blending of all these currencies. So it makes sense if you work backwards. You want to do a one world government, right? So how do you do that? Well, you click up these countries into one bigger group. EU is, like you said, the blueprint for this. And then you say, well, if this works, then we can do it with South America, Africa, you know, and these other, click them up into regional groups, and then eventually connect all those regional groups to one another, or at least have the same sort of management philosophy that flows through all of them. Maybe you don't even need to link them up, as long as they all think the same, they act the same. So it becomes almost the same. So is that kind of slow motion where we're going, blending everybody into homogenizing everybody? I mean, if you're going to create the American Union, why waste your money defending a southern border or a northern border for that matter, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got all these books behind me, and Club of Rome. I purchased like 70s, from eBay or whatever Amazon used, and it's got a map there from the 70s. I think that they literally had 10 world regions, and I mean, myself as a Christian, you look at the book. I think it's the book of Daniel that talks about I think Nebuchadnezzar's dream, where he has this figure. And it shows the end of history, right? It's got the head, it's like gold and then silver and then bronze and then iron. And it talks about the world empires, you know, Babylon and Egypt and whatnot. And then the iron empire would be Rome, which splits into the two legs, you know, Eastern and Western, 1,000 years ago. And then it gets down, the end of history is the 10 toes, your 10 toes, which is iron mixed with clay. So 10 kingdoms. So there's some people that are positing that, and it's Club of Rome. Right? Roman Empire, Club of Rome, the 10th. And then the Club of Rome puts out in the 70s. I got the book. You can open the map. You can find it on Google Images. 10 regions of the world. And what we're talking about are these 10 regions, which would form the basis, you know, just as you outlined for world, and everyone's doing it. You know, I technically, I work for Nur Sultan Nazarbayev, the former president of Kazakhstan. I lived there for 3 years. I worked for the fourth year virtually from Mexico. In 94, it was supposedly his idea to create the Eurasian Union. And so Putin and Nazarbayev, and I was at Nazarbayev's private library. We had a model United Nations event there. So we used his library foundation. It's got all of his, it's huge. It's got his memorabilia of all of his life. And there was a book I found that was, I think the title literally said something about globalism. So he's totally globalist, you know, Nazarbayev, the ex-leader of Kazakhstan. And so they're all pushing this. And yeah, and you know, ASEAN, the Southeast Asian Union, they, and like you said, they try different shortcuts. So it won't necessarily be the same thing. Like Amero would be for, maybe they'll just use the dollar from North America. Who knows? Yeah. Well, you've got the euro. But in ASEAN, what they were, I read just a few weeks ago, they've got their currencies, but they want to sort of put them into a basket and then create maybe like a digital representation or token. So that would be their one currency for ASEAN. So they're trying to do the same thing as the euro in a slightly different way, using this, you know, digital currency trend. And so, yeah, I think that's where we're headed. And it seems like they're accelerating this. I have no idea how long, you know, it could take. And, you know, in history, they have setbacks, right? But it really seems like they're stepping on the pedal, you know.
Club of Rome always sounded like it should have been a gay bar at Caesar's Palace to me. But
business idea. There he goes. A business idea for someone.
Those lunatics, I'll tell you, they never give up. That's 50 years that Limits to Growth came out, and they're still talking about this. And it's more diabolical, I'd say, than even just the world governments, where they're talking about, you know, this climate change contraption, you know, using this as the funding mechanism for this one world government. What do you think the role of the Club of Rome is anymore? You think that they really have they been outed to the general public, or is it still hidden enough that they can get some things done, you think?
I don't spend too much time wondering about specific groups. Like you mentioned trilateral. Mm-hmm. I was reading the article in Nikkei Asia just a few weeks ago that they met recently trilateral. I think it was the first time in a couple of years because of the pandemic. And I think it's the first time they actually invited press to attend the trilateral meeting. And Alex Krainer, I think, you know, my fellow Croat, I've interviewed him. He was saying, reading this as a signal that they're losing their potency. The fact that they invited, press for the first time, but like Club of Rome. I mean, I think all of these organizations are still key. Like this global power structure, It's a smorgasbord, right? Like, you know, still Bilderberg is there and Davos and Trilateral and Club of Rome. So I think they're, in the big picture, I think they're a key cog. That's just kind of the way I view it. I don't necessarily think they're the ones driving it, but they're one of the, thing. Like in my Telegram group, someone mentioned Knights of Malta, and I got to visit their private grounds in Rome when I was a grad student. And I put some pictures in, and you know, I think again, Knights of Malta is probably part of that same power structure. But it's because when we're going to world government, it's such a massive thing they're trying to do, take over the planet.
Yeah,
they need so many of these, you know, NGOs and religious groups and UN and they're trying to put it all together. But I mean, again, from my view, the Bible says and it implies that it's iron mixed with clay. So it's very fragile and it won't last long. You know, you just think about it. It's such a huge system that it cannot endure. It will, I think it will achieve its apex, but then it'll collapse. I mean, you can't build something like that.
Yeah, it's tough to build that. Well, I see that the we talk about them building these world empires and maybe it's just it starts with a philosophy. We're building this, but right now they're physically building this with the One Belt One Road initiative out of China. We're seeing this connection now. If this were just the new Silk Road. You know what I mean? If this were just the new, a new trading outpost that connected all of these, I would be fine with that if it were under the guise of this is just going to, you know, for business purposes, we're going to create this new sort of pipeline or channel that where we can all sort of collectively work together. I could probably get on board with that, but I feel like that's just maybe the first step before they slam the doors shut on this prison that you're in. But what are you seeing about with this? I just had John Perkins on, and I was talking to him about the economic hitman concept, and he was saying, "Well, I've got the third version of Confessions coming out in February, and it's talking about the economic hitman, the Chinese economic hitman in Africa." And I said, "Oh, well, that's part of this One Belt One Road initiative." He says, "Yeah, it has something to do with it." What have you found about this Belt and Road initiative that's going through? Is that something that's actually going to get put together, or is this some sort of like pipe dream that these people have?
Yeah, I interviewed John Perkins like 8 years ago with my class, and I had him on TNT as well, like weeks ago. Yeah, he's interesting, but I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out. Like, I don't have all the answers. It seems like the more and more the stuff that we do, it's like the more and more we do this is I feel like the less answers I have, the less I know. It's just
it's so true. It's like the more you learn, you go, well, I didn't know that, and you go, I didn't know, oh, I just learned that, well, I didn't know that for all these years, and you go, shit, what else don't I know? You know, I probably don't know anything compared to the whole grand scheme of things. So I understand that on some levels we're speculating and we have to guess, but you understand empires, you understand how they're built, and you understand how they fall apart, and you understand that they follow a very predictable cycle, and how they get built up and then they collapse under the weight of their own ignorance and insanity. And I just wonder, I mean, with China, the way China is doing things, China seems to not have this expansionist mentality. They tend to sort of be, well, maybe economically they do, but in terms of like just going out and conquering, and we haven't seen that for a while. I wonder, are they planning to conquer through the marketplace? Are they, is this part of ingratiating themselves in Africa by partnering with them instead of what America does, which is bomb the shit out of them?
Yeah, I'd agree that I don't view the enemy as the CCP or China. I like, you know, there's the war hawks now that are pushing, you know, this, you know, it's, you know, on the right, this like fake right, you know, pushing war with China and whatnot. I don't buy that. I did a really good interview with Emmanuel Pastrik recently. I found his article, he calls it the Third Opium War, was one of the best explanations of COVID-19 1984 that I've ever up until now read, where he says it's basically global private finance, IT companies and private intelligence that did the COVID coup. And you've got the big tech, like, you know, Amazon and Alibaba, but also the more specialized companies like these Israeli IT companies and other, you know, more specific advanced units, not just in Israel. They have taken over all of our governments. And so, and I've seen that here in Mexico, the local government. I mean, just in Nuevo León, Samuel García, I've been calling this guy out for 2 years. This guy's nuts. He's an ultra globalist. Like last year in Mexico, in his state of Nuevo León, he wanted to fine people. If you made fun of him online on social media, you supposedly would have gotten 36 hours jail and a fine. He was recently at COP27. He got rid of that article because so much pushback, but he was at COP27 and he said there's 6 million people in Nuevo León, 3 million drive cars. He says he wants to completely get rid of private vehicle use.
Okay.
And that's the whole agenda. And he just said he's going to run for president in Mexico. And guess what? Yesterday, mandatory face masks are now obligatory in Nuevo León. This guy's full on globalist, but now I was losing my point here.
It's a mentality. Yeah. These guys, they get their marching orders. You got to play ball. And that's, and like, well, you were mentioning private intelligence, you know, the people that were really behind the COVID component. It's not who we think it is, right? It's intelligence agencies, big tech. The role of big tech in COVID was so important. I think I don't know that people really understand the role of that censoring and how they manipulated perceptions of especially obviously we're getting the Twitter files now. Not that we didn't already know that, but you see how they can just make they can make reality. They can, you know, exclude some components of it. They can magnify others. And next thing you know, you're saying, well, we can get rid of cars in my city state. You know, we will bring mandatory face masks back. You're like, what media are you watching? Because everyone else is going, this is over. We're done with masks. But that lunatic in your region is saying, bring that back. That's nuts.
Yeah. My point was then what this thesis of my last guest was that, so people like Samuel Garcia and all of our govern, most, you know, many of our governors and presidents, they've outsourced everything to these forces, technocratic forces that came in, that have pressured, bribed, blackmailed. And then they just give all governance to these IT, you know, to this technocracy. And that's, so the enemy isn't the Chinese people and the American people and Mexican people. We're all suffering. We're all under this. It's like these foreign invasion of the body snatcher. So the Chinese, I don't think it's the CCP. It's the CCP that has allowed these forces to come in and manage the whole QR code stuff. And they're the ones that, so it's not the CCP. Going back to the Belt and Road, I think it's going to be kind of like the internet, where the internet was, I view that the internet from the very beginning and social media from the very beginning, the goal was always to create this. I believe it was a sinister goal from the start, because, you know, it all came out of like DARPA and the Pentagon, yeah, and, you know, Operation Paperclip and Nazis. Like, the intent from the beginning was this, and it's like a web. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not for nothing they call it the web. So they laid it all out. It was all free and wonderful, and we all, you know, come into the open camp farm, and while we're all, you know, there, they start putting up, like on the farm, the fences, electrified, yeah, fences to keep us in. I kind of feel like Belt and Road might be like that, where initially it might improve lives of people, but I feel like that's that infrastructure that wants to build, pull the world together. There's a lot of great people that I talk to that I like, that I love. They're more optimistic on this multipolar, yeah, world, but I'm just more cynical. I view that it's the exact opposite. I view it as a Trojan horse, where if you study global governance, world federation, the way towards world government is precisely multipolar world, because you can't have a unipolar system where the, you know, the U.S. forces upon everyone world government. It has to have always that veneer of freedom. And so, mm-hmm, you have to get rid of unipolarity and get all 194 countries to plug in, you know, to the global system. So it's like multipolar world federation government. And then slowly over time, they start taking the mask off and tightening the screws. And so that's just kind of how I view it.
I've had Mark Malone on my show, and he talks about that he's always quick to differentiate between global government and global governance. And that there's a difference. He goes, but where everyone thinks that they're worried about global government. It's like, really, it's governance. It's what you have to worry about, because that's even more devious, because it's, you think you're independent, but it's, you're being managed in a way that sort of is the same all the way around. And that gives me the creeps. These guys have a real hard on for this one world government. But I think that any component of, when you start talking about global government, is always sort of the common thread running through it is depopulation. Because if you talk about putting everyone together, it's easier when there's fewer people. So I just wonder also if when I'm hearing people talk about global government or global governance, that what they're really talking about, or what they're really sort of is at the core of that, is, well, in order for this whole project to work, we're just going to need to get rid of a bunch of you guys. Do you get that feeling that's sort of a theme running through part of this?
I mean, you can escape it. By the way, I'm going to have Mark Malone for the first time on my TNT show this week.
Oh, perfect.
I just discovered him. So it's funny how we all, you know, we're on the same frequency. But I mean, it's clear. The question is how they go about it. I think it's much harder to depopulate than we think. I mean, if you think about it, how many billions of people, and, you know, from the independent media the last 2 years, they're like, everyone's who's injected, half the world's going to die from the injections. I think there's a lot of hype in independent, mm-hmm, media. I think a lot of people are, you know, over time going to die, but I think it takes a lot to take us down. And so, you know, initially I thought it would be like nuclear war. I mean, I think nuclear war is bad, but I think, again, if there was a nuclear war, I think the consequences are a bit hyped as well. I think we could come back from that, you know, quicker. So I think it's just a combination of things. It's a list of things. So it includes war, you know, which impoverishes the region, and people, you know, they starve. When you're impoverished, right, your health becomes worse. You become more susceptible to disease. So it's going to be war. The economy, you can see everywhere, just people being impoverished, middle class being wiped out. I see it all over the place. And then disease, you know, biological warfare. So, you know, what is it? Famine. So famine, disease, war, a combination of all this stuff. And I think the easiest is try to induce people to commit suicide, which is these injections.
Right.
So that's just push people to do it themselves. Like, here, take this thing, inject yourself, and, you know, do the job for us. I think is the most effective way to depopulate. And then, you know, you get sterilization. I think there's that Utopia TV show. I haven't seen it yet. But, you know, I also think of the Bible. The Bible says that if Jesus doesn't return sooner, there will be no flesh left alive. Like, there will be nobody on the planet. And you think, how could that scenario come about? And I think the easiest is sterilization. People have all these images of, you know, nuclear war is going to end the world. I don't think it would. I think sterilization, because if you get enough people sterilized, think about it. In one generation or two, there's no people.
Yeah.
And it's people don't like that because it's not like a Hollywood vision. I mean, but it's simple. You just sterilize enough people in one or two generations, no one's left on earth.
Well, it's not out of, I mean, it sounds, you know, the first time somebody hears that, they go, oh, you guys are crazy. And it's like, well, hang on a second. That's like a known side effect of the shot. It's a known side effect of a lot of things. We don't know the full ramifications of what 5G is. We keep cell phones in our pockets. That cannot be good for, as guys, that can't be, well, it really is anybody, but especially as guys, that can't be good. We have testosterone levels that are as the average, I think I saw a stat that said that the average 25-year-old man has the testosterone level of a 75-year-old man. You know, we've got chemicals that are doing that. We've got gender bending. We've got everybody's trans. There's 100 different genders. I mean, there's definitely a psychological or social component to this to try and make everybody very confused about who they are, or what they are, or what their role is. Or am I going to reproduce? Reproduction? You know, then you throw climate on that. Oh, I'm going to kill the polar bears if I have kids and all this stuff. And it's like, there's a physical sterilization program, but then there's also like this closeted psychological that's happening too, that's taking a whole new generation of people and making them feel guilty for being alive. It's crazy.
My solution, honestly, like, some people don't want to have kids because they think it's, you know, the apocalypse. And, you know, I think it could very much well be. I don't know. Maybe. It could be now. It could be in 50 years, 100. But just make babies, like, you know, screw it. Like, you know, Klaus Schwab, whatever. He doesn't want us to. You know, I got two kids. Just make more babies. I interviewed Mark Mallett. He's this well-known Catholic. We were talking about the end of the world a couple weeks ago on TNT. He's got 8 kids. A lot of people in my church got like 4 or 5 kids.
I don't even know 8 kids. Jeez, that's a lot.
I mean, I'd forget their names. I would just, you know, give them numbers. But
Elon Musk has that problem. He's got a bunch of kids too.
Yeah, I would just say don't. People should just be more, as bad as things are, just have a, you know, forward-looking attitude and try to remain lighthearted and optimistic, and regardless, you know, a more stoic attitude, you know.
And stay out of Canada too, because now they're starting to sell this death style of come check out our medical assistance in dying program. And yes, it's, you know, it's stunning and brave, and look at this commercial that we shot for this, and 10,000 people were chose that. This is optional. Now, right? Can you envision a world in which it's like, oh, you got a D+ on your math test? May I offer you suicide? I mean, this is craziness, right?
No, I mean, but put this stuff together. The mayor of New York just said they're going to be taking homeless people off the streets forcefully.
Yes.
And putting them into mental hospitals. And then Canada made, right, the program where, mm-hmm. like, at any age now, you can just go and kill yourself. And then soon people like you and me are going to be classified as mentally ill and renditioned. One of my favorite guests I've had on was Edwin Black, the Jewish historian. I got all his books, and he's got a great weekly Zoom program. And on one of his programs, he was talking about, I think it's in his books, War on the Weak. In the 1930s, I think it was like Ohio, the governor of Ohio, 1930s, almost a century, in America, he was going to run an open eugenics program where he was going to take people that were considered undesirables, and they're going to set up like a camp in the Ozarks and then ship them out there for extermination. I'm like, they were going to do this. And if people who study, it's like, it wasn't Hitler, you know, all the eugenic stuff didn't start with Hitler. It was America. It was British. Britain and America are these death cult Malthusian, eugenicists, and they're still running the show. They've just, you know, climate change is the new face. It's eugenics 2.0 and all of this stuff, the pandemic and climate. It's just, it's a death cult that wants to kill us. And I don't doubt at some point what you say. I think we're going to also see Running Man. Remember the 80s film with Schwarzenegger?
Of course. Yeah.
And the Squid Game. And then I just read that they actually have a real like Squid Game. Like for fun, like you can like a real world type of escape room type Squid Game. I don't doubt at some future point this real killing is going to be involved. Seriously,
Mr. Beast, that YouTube guy built out a full Squid Game stage, like a whole set in North Carolina. It must have cost him like $1 million to build, and then he had all these participants in it. But for those that are a little bit too young that don't remember the Running Man movie, it came out in the 80s, had Arnold Schwarzenegger in it. It was basically like Hunger Games before Hunger Games, where they turned it into like the most popular show on television was the Running Man. And they took these contestants that had been like, I don't know, sentenced to death or something. And they put them in these situations where it was like Gladiator. I mean, they just sent him out, and then they sent one of the villains who would go out there and chase him down and kill him. And then it was like filmed in front of a live studio audience that would be watching it on monitors. And you watch it in the 80s and you go, oh, that's crazy. And then you watch it now and you go, when is this show going to be airing on ABC? It feels like it should be on this week, man. It's like we're the future is now. We got RoboCop. We have San Francisco talking about like, oh, we're going to have robotic cops and we're going to arm them and everything. It's like, didn't you watch RoboCop? He murders the entire board of directors halfway through the movie. Did you guys not see that part? And everyone's like, ah, no, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's just shocking when you look back and all these. I mean, I think these sci-fi films were projections of what they were going to try to do with different variations, because things pan out differently at, you know, the rate of advancement of technology and setbacks and stuff. And, you know, they modify stuff, but I really think that they were projecting this stuff. H.G. Wells, I mean, he was one of them projecting through his literature, sci-fi. I think Orwell as well. I'm not sure how innocent Orwell was. I think he was privy to a lot of this information.
Me too.
And I mean, how can you predict to this, you know, granular degree? And Huxley obviously was an elite. I mean, his brother Julian and everything, but and then Bertrand Russell, that psychopath.
Yeah.
But it's nuts where we're quickly, you know, it's here.
And it feels like they're going to use the impending social credit score as a way to put a number on to quantify your loyalty to the state. And deem you to be a, I don't know, an undesirable or feeble-minded or just a drag on society. And we see this in China. We've been talking about China a bunch, but we saw this in Shenzhen getting set up there with facial recognition cameras. And like any normal person takes a look at this and they go, oh, that's horrifying. I don't want to live in that society. But the World Economic Forum people see that and they go, oh, this is fantastic. We love what you've done here. Please explain to us more. Like, it's this social credit system. Let's get into this just a little bit, because I feel like this is going to be, you talk about the cage being built around you. Man, this social credit system feels like a huge trap. And I feel like most people are going to sprint into it, not even knowing the game, and get themselves, not just get themselves trapped, but get us all kind of involved in this too. What's your take on the social credit system and how this thing's going to get unfurled on us?
I mean, I've identified this as the number one imminent threat. Mm-hmm. And I've been banging on about this for the two plus past years. And again, I always use, I mean, there's a lot of great people that have talked about this. I had on Dr. Aaron Heriot. I got his book right over here. He calls it the biomedical security state. You know, you've got social credit system. Others call it the electronic concentration camp, like, you know, Daniel Estulin or the great Russian thinker Fursov. I almost got him on my podcast, but he's super busy. Andrei Fursov. But Edwin Black calls it the algorithm ghetto. And people get pissed at me for comparing COVID to Nazi Germany. I'm like, no, look, I actually bought the Aachen Pass from 1938 on eBay from an antique seller in for $10 in Italy. I bought four of them for all of my family. It's the Nazi. You had to prove your Aryan purity, your biological purity, which is like the same as the COVID pass. And then separately, they had the Nazi health pass. And so Edwin Black himself, who's Jewish, he calls, you know, the physical Jewish ghetto, like the algorithm ghetto. And so you're going to be, and so what they're doing is they're severing all physical, you know, analog physical life. As human history, we've been like this forever. And I think it's a timeless thing. I don't think it's inevitable that we have to go digital. I like the real physical world. And so they're delinking everything, you know, getting rid of cash, you know, your digital, your physical driver's license is going to be, everything's going to be digital. And then they control that. And then it's as you said, I mean, if you don't behave, they'll just shut you off. And you see it everywhere. It's like, it's so insidious. It's in every freaking country. It's in city. I see it here in Mexico. They, in Guadalajara, like 2 years ago, they introduced something called Hoosies. And it's like basically a social credit system. It's like a cute little app. And they're getting many restaurants and cafes and businesses to sign on. And how do you get Hoosies? You generate Hoosies by doing what they tell you to do. If you ride your bike or walk, you'll generate Hoosies. And somehow it tracks you on your app when you do that. And then you'll get Hoosies. And then they're interchangeable one-to-one to the peso. And so you can go to these businesses and, you know, get a coffee or a meal, exchanging your social credit Hoosies for that stuff. So this stuff is operating all over the place. In Kazakhstan, I mean, I've got on my phone, I guess, since I got a Kazakh bank account. And in the app is the Ashuk app. That's that COVID digital passport. And in Kazakhstan, you cannot enter a cafe without scanning the Ashuk app to prove you're vaccinated or tested. And so this stuff is just the groundwork. It's right now behind the scenes. It's moving forward. You know, Joe Allen, who's on the Steve Bannon report, he's been my guest on TNT. He just tweeted, he was at an airport, I think. Where's LaGuardia? Is that in Texas?
It's New York, Long Island.
Okay, yeah, he just said there, like, he couldn't buy any food because it was just QR codes and no cash. And I mean, this is advancing. And, like, I got banned from PayPal. I believe it was the Department of Homeland Security in April, because now the documents are coming out. It was the DHS who deemed me a threat and told PayPal to ban my account. And I was looking at the documents. It's nuts. They consider what I'm doing, I'm a non-kinetic threat, it actually says. And they classify what we're doing as disinformation, and that we are attacking the cyber infrastructure of the U.S. government. And so, I mean, that's freaking. And then so that's why they told PayPal to turn off my and Mint Press and Consortium News and many others. And so Kanye had his bank account shut. And so, and then everything's going to be digital ID, digital passport, digital money. And it's like, oh, you posted something, you know, a quote from the Bible on your social media. In Colima, in Mexico, there was a female politician who's Christian. This is like 2 years ago. She was just posting quotes from the Bible. She just posts quotes, no personal comments, just quotes on her personal Facebook. And she posted the quote talking about how homosexuality is a sin. Mm-hmm. She got fired from her job in Colima from the government. So if you don't agree with LGBT, if you don't mask up or get vaxxed up, if you counter the war narrative, whatever war, you know, now it's Ukraine, tomorrow will be whatever. On and on. The list will just keep getting longer. And then we saw it's going to be like in COVID. You won't be able to go to a public park. You won't be able to go into the supermarket to buy food. You won't be able to work because you'll be fired. You won't be able to travel. And I think ultimately it's going to be like geofence. Like you won't, the 15 minute cities, you won't even be able to go far from your home. Your car will be taken away. I mean, this is where, and it's not a joke, because here in Guadalajara, I live in a smart city. It's a resilient smart city funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. I found actual papers. If anyone wants to know, they can email me, but, cause I came back 2 years ago and they're building out this public transport like crazy that I've never seen before. I'm like, what are they doing? Where's this money coming from? And I found that Guadalajara is a resilient city. Resilient cities are funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. And then they're cutting car lanes. Like there's streets where I've been down where there used to be three lanes and now they're two lanes. It's a bike lane. And then they're building these macro buses, you know, all these all over the place, buses and above ground subways and metros and trams. So they're going to say, you don't have an excuse. You know, when we take away your car, look, you've got public transport now. Yeah. And this public transport, you can't even use cash now. You have to use your credit card or the digital card or your phone. So you see how that's going to work. Get rid of your car. And if you don't behave, well, you can't even use public transport. So if I insult the governor, I won't be able to use public transport.
Well, I was just talking to Richie Allen about this too, and he's in Manchester. He was talking about how they do that. He had been told by somebody years ago that worked in the equivalent of like city council in some city. And he said that they were getting proposals for barriers that came, that you could put at the end of streets that would be pushed, that would go down into the ground, but then could be activated and could be raised up and create physical barriers to wall off particular streets. Now, he said the first time he heard that, he thought, well, that's interesting, but I haven't seen any proof of that. I've never seen anything quite like that. But I suppose it could happen. And he said just recently they've been talking about building that out in his area, about how they're building. He goes, that's what that guy was talking about. So they're talking about, you know, using this climate catastrophe as the justification to get you out of your cars and get you into this public transportation, or get you thinking that, you know, a behavior modification can't go on, you know, it's Tuesday. You know, you can't drive your car on Tuesday. I mean, you have an odd number ending license plate, and everybody knows odd numbered ending license plate can't drive on Tuesday, you know? So they're trying to get these people to think about this through the lens of climate change. But it's really just social control, right? This is eventually where they're going to go. So they use the climate component as a justification to push even more people into this digital gulag.
Yeah, I mean, that's already happening in Mexico City. I mean, Mexico City is 25 million people, huge. I mean, it takes hours to traverse to go anywhere. And they already do that. They have days where, you know, even plated cars can. But if you think about it, like everyone I know here, for their full-time jobs, they have every day from Monday to Saturday. Most people here work 6 days a week, half days on Saturday, and they have to, you know, drive 30 minutes, 1 hour to work. So now imagine, you know, it's Monday, you use your car to go to work, you drive an hour, and Tuesday you can't use the car. How you got to take the bus? I mean, it's gonna like, and then it's gonna take like 2 hours to get to work, and then just imagine that impact on your life. You have to get up 1 hour earlier, less sleep, just more stress, and taking the bus sucks. When I first came here, it was like, it's literally packed like sardines. Like you have to wait like for multiple buses to pass so you could find one space to squish in. And I just started paying for a taxi, and then eventually I got a car. I mean, this is 2010 when I came to Mexico. So, and as you said, people are just lap this up. It's unbelievable. Just QR, everyone just loves around me that I see QR codes. They're all buying on Amazon. Like the whole street is littered with Amazon boxes here in Mexico. And even to enter my gated community now, you can either use the physical key card, which of course I keep, or now they have biometrics. So you can just enter with your finger. I see my neighbors entering with their finger. They've given their print to the, you know, administration, the gated community. And it's like, everyone's just lapping this stuff up. And yeah, we're going to walk straight into the to the camps.
Man, I'll tell you, I don't think people understand the game. They see it as like a convenient, or the evolution of technology. Well, yeah, you know, first, you know, when we were younger, we had to, you know, you had to carry a camera with you, or, you know, whatever. You didn't have a cell phone. You didn't have all these different things. Now you've got a cell phone that does 18 different things that you used to have different devices for. I suppose it's natural to assume that the progression is, well, yeah, well, I mean, eventually we'll just use our thumbprints, which is fine if you're not a paranoid person like us. I mean, we see, I'm not giving you my thumbprint. My wife was always like, oh, I can get you, you know, join Clear so you can get through the airports and everything. I go, it requires like biometric stuff. It's like, yeah, they do like an eye scan or something. So I'm not doing that. I'm not giving these people. I'm going to make them hold me down and take my biometrics from, you know, physically take it from me before I volunteer it. But we're just going to in order for convenience, we're going to allow ourselves to be marched into a world that's unrecognizable to us. But I guess if they get rid of 70% of the people, we won't have those traffic problems, right? I mean, we got to look at the bright side of things, right, your boy?
Yeah, that's true. Life will be easier for those that haven't taken the shot. But I mean, you're a very, you know, you have a very positive, chipper attitude, and I think we do. We have to have it. I mean, they'll take me away to the mental asylum or camps, and I'll just be laughing. And I mean, what else are you gonna do? But I mean, what are your thoughts on how do we respond to all of this? Like I always say, there's a lot of people that are coming down to Mexico. And so, you know, some people are choosing specific countries to just go away to, and others are just leaving urban areas to go to rural areas. That seems to be the biggest theme that I catch from people when it comes to like solutions. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have, with regard to delivering this bad news to everyone about this social credit system and about how, you know, the direction we're headed and that they're trying to depopulate us, I always run this, try to walk this fine line between talking about the very serious nature of this, but also not scaring the shit out of everybody, because I know it's really scary to think about this. And you start to go, oh my God, what am I going to do about it? And this future sounds terrible. So I try to have a sense of humor, because I think we also have to remember these people are not gods. They make huge mistakes. There's only a few of them compared to the rest of us. They need us to comply. They need us to participate in this. We do have options. They make it very difficult. I will give them that. But you know, and they set up the systems and we can choose to participate or not. But I try to keep it as lighthearted as I can when talking about this stuff to you know, laugh, to I guess maybe to keep from crying. But I am concerned. I'm concerned more about our kids' future. I mean, I think that it's going to be unrecognizable from what we've experienced. But then again, you look back on other generations and it's always unrecognizable. You know, there's always progress. But I don't think this progress is going in the right direction. I think we are getting, I think we're being misled by some very devious people. I mean, you have Harari over at the World Economic Forum just straight up saying, we don't need most of you. And that is something that they've always thought, but never really verbalized. I mean, maybe in some of the books, but you have to go actively search for that. But they're this boldness about them that they almost feel like they can tell us what they're going to do and we're not going to do anything about that. I think that gives me the creeps, because it makes me think that they know something we don't know. But at the same time, I have to remember, these are not impressive people. Harari is not an impressive guy. He's a wormy little guy who doesn't have a very grounded view of humanity. I think he's a psychopath. I think a lot of these people are. But I try to keep it in. I try to, you know, inside remember, game's not over yet. There's still a fourth quarter. We still get to come back. We still get to play, you know, a little bit more. We'll see how these people do. They don't seem to be the most impressive people around. I watch the World Economic Forum stuff and I think, like, this seems almost cartoonish. Klaus Schwab, really? You're going to dress him up in the Emperor Palpatine outfit and have him come out with a hard German accent like Adolf Hitler, and we're just supposed to not recognize how hilarious this is? Like, there's some funny parts to the World Economic Forum, right? Some of
them. And just the way you mentioned the Harari, I mean, I thought about this a while back where crazy. He's got this, you know, he's got this best-selling book. He's the priest. He's their priest. Yeah. Because you have to have the, you know, the politicians leading this stuff, the economic elites, and they have to have a priest that kind of communicates to the masses. And if you think about it, though, his book Sapiens, whatever it's called, if he didn't have the backing of these people, they made him a bestseller. Yeah. Like that book could have just been published and no one would have knew about it. You know, junk, garbage. But so he was artificially propelled to be this priest, just to what you're saying. He's not by his own nature or qualities some genius. I mean, they can make anyone. They can make a rock or a turd, you know, make us think, oh, wow.
They made Sam Bankman-Fried the next J.P. Morgan, and he's a straight-up criminal.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at him and his assistant, the way they talk, like they don't even know what they're doing. And so they could, you look at the music world. I mean, they just take junk music and they make everyone, they bring attention to it. And I had on Vinny Caggiano, James Corbett's music theory teacher, and we were talking about this, how, you know, you've got all high quality musicians that are just known in their local areas. They could, you know, be propelled. Anyone could be propelled to stardom. But, I came across today some quotes. Leo Tolstoy said, frequently salvation comes precisely when it appears as though all is lost. And there was a great quote from Tolkien as well. Faithless is he who says farewell when the road darkens. So, it's just that
we have to keep going. We have no choice. We're going to be here. We're going to be annoyed by this. We're going to be fighting for it. So I'm not giving up. I know you're not giving up. What do you have planned? What's going on over at TNT? I really like that network. You guys have got some cool shows. I was just, Michael Parker had me on and I really enjoyed talking to him. And I've been communicating with the people over there. What do you have planned for that? What's going on for you for the new year? What do you think?
Oh, well, I mean, I think you were on TNT the first time with me, no? Some months back.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah, first time I was on was with you. Yes, for sure. That's how it got on my radar. I was like, well, this is interesting. I like this.
Yeah. Place. I mean, I
looked at the lineup of all the shows and I was like, damn, they got a lot of shows.
Yeah. I mean, Alex Jones has been on TNT. I mean, you name it. I'm still shocked. Like, I still can't believe, because I was hired to do that in March. Mm-hmm. Full time, and so it's still like it's like living the dream. I mean, you're doing what you like. You get paid to do it, and no one tells me anything. I have minimal contact with like TNT. It's just like as long as you know you show up, you do your show, and you get good guests and stuff. And so, yeah, we're running with it. It's a lot of fun. They're growing slowly. They keep adding stuff to the website. I think maybe one day they might want to do video. I don't know. Although I think I like the audio. A lot of people tend to listen audio only. And so, they want to keep growing the TNT radio network. And, I'm just doing my podcast. I'll be going to the Empire, to the U.S., this end of the year. And Greater Reset in January, Derek Bros. Maybe I should come out to Acapulco and see you.
Look, it's not as big of a deal for you because you're already in Mexico where it's nice and toasty during the winter. But for a lot of people, it's nice to blend a little vacation in with all of the education. Every time I've gone, I've left an Acapulco feeling a little bit sad because it's over, and I'm not going to have access to all these people or all these conversations. But I also leave feeling really sort of motivated and inspired because there's so many smart people out there doing interesting things. Like when I get to around the people that are doing the homeschooling and the unschooling programs, I listen to them and what they're doing. I go, God, that is so smart. The way you guys have set this up and how it's scalable and how you've done it. And I every time I'm there, I meet Jeremy Kaufman from Library Odyssey will be there speaking. David Icke, it's like, you want to go to the bar at 8 o'clock at night on a Tuesday and, get into a conversation with David. I got into a conversation at 2:30 in the morning with Ole Damengard in the bar talking about Gladio.
Okay, that's hilarious. Like, but are those people like David Icke and Ron Paul? Do they come in person or do they stream in?
No, wow. They come in person. Yeah. Yeah.
David Icke will be one of the few countries he can visit now. Mexico.
I know. I know. He's banned in the Schengen region.
All of Europe, basically, like 26 countries or whatever.
Well, it's not the first time either, because when I was leaving Acapulco in 2019, we were on the same flight out and out of Acapulco to Mexico City. And then he was going to LA and then I was going home. And he was going to LA because that was his stopping point before going to Australia on a speaking tour there. And when he got to LA, they canceled his visa for Australia. So this is, they just called him like a threat, you know, like this. So if you want to see the most dangerous people in the world, come to Anarchapulco, where you can see Ron Paul, where an 80-year-old white Republican who did 20 years in American government, who rightly should be booed off the stage, comes out there and it gets a standing ovation because it's about principles and he's about sound money and these people understand him. So it's always kind of a fun mix to see who's there. And I don't know. I invite everybody to come. But
I might make the drive. I mean, like you said, I think it's important. And at the beginning of the year in Puerto Vallarta, well, Sayulita, technically, there was a libertarian sort of like podcast conference. You know, Mark Claire was there, Buck Johnson, Clint Russell. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, you network and you meet these people in real life, and that sort of builds stuff for you. And then, like I said, I'm going to the greater reset. So maybe I'll end up seeing you there. And I recently had the Ron Paul Institute Twitter account and call my podcast The Real Underground, where the real intellectual revolution takes place. I think it was Daniel McAdams. He's been
nice.
But recently he just got reinstated yesterday on Twitter.
He's back.
He's back.
Yeah, he's back on Twitter. It's funny. I mean, listen, Elon Musk is not going to magically wave a wand and fix everything. But I do like to see from time to time some of these accounts that you know were sort of artificially suppressed come back. Ron Paul, right? You're gonna suppress Ron Paul, seriously? It's crazy, man. Yeah, I enjoy those conferences because you get a chance to hear from people that have done it and think differently and are building parallel societies and are doing things outside of the box. And they're not saying, hey, we're gonna come in here and we're gonna fix this system. They're saying, this system was designed to be flawed. We're going to build a different system and we're going to attract people. Best place for people to find you?
If you type in the podcast in the Google search engine, it won't pop up. But just go to geopoliticsandempire.com and then, you know, tntradio.live. You'll find my show there as well. And yeah, I've got a couple sponsors people can donate to me or become members. And you'll find me on Twitter and Telegram. Those are the places where I'm most active. I'm on all the other places, but there's not much action there, like MeWe, Gab, Minds, and Float.
Yeah. They're trying. We respect them. With the Float, Kingsley and Aaron from Float, I'm sure will be at Anarchapulco too. They're always there. So for those of you out there, if you want to catch a really great radio show, you're gonna get it 5 nights a week. Go check out the Hervoy Moritz show on tntlive.com and please
tntradio.live.
tntradiolive.com. Sorry, yes. All the links will be in the description. Hervoy, you're the best. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate you.
It was awesome being on your show, and here's to Croatia defeating France in the World Cup.
Absolutely. That's what we're pulling for. If you guys like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggression, the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody.